Morning. This is Bo Brendler with the ALAC, and I'm glad those of you who could join us did join us. I'm going to speak slowly because part of the reason for having this briefing is because we have been able to get translation of the RAA into French and Spanish for the first time, which I believe everyone has been notified about already. I have also written out all of what I'm going to say for the purposes of translation and written out what's going to be said today in terms of notes, so those can be posted and translated as necessary. And I've sent those documents to be posted. I am not on Adobe Connect, so if you have an Adobe Connect question, I would have to defer to Nick Ashton Hart, I believe, or another appropriate moderator to review Adobe Connect. I am simply on telephone and internet, regular internet at the moment.
I will tell you what comes up.
Okay, so what we're going to do briefly is I'm just going to give a brief introduction to the briefing today, and then Tim Cole, who is ICANN staff chief liaison to registrars, is going to give a briefing, and then we'll come back with some discussion of possible concerns and advocacy issues related to the RAA, and then there'll be time for some questions, I think, at the end, obviously. So, again, today's briefing represents an opportunity for the ALAC and other user community representatives, notably those whose native language is French or Spanish, to understand proposed changes to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. The RAA has been in place more than 7 years. We may not get another chance to see substantive changes made to it very soon. So this briefing is also important because in a little over a year or so that I've been working on consumer issues as part of ICANN's at large, I've come to agree with many of those who say that the most significant consumer and user community issues come down to elements in this agreement and the enforcement or lack of enforcement thereof. So this is very important for the at-large community to consider. It's great that Tim Cole is joining us to talk about this. Note that the RAA revision process goes back almost a year. The ALAC made comments on the RAA after the meeting in San Juan, but has yet to make an official comment yet on the revisions. So that's obviously going to be the meat of what we talk about in the briefing. So when Tim is done, I want to raise some points of concern. We have a window of about 2 weeks in which all of us in the at-large have a chance to make comments about the RAA before the final close. In fact, the formal comment period has closed, but we have some extra time because of the space of time of the translation, since it was not asked for specifically until the Paris conference. So ICANN staff and Tim need to make a report to the board fairly early in September, or at least prepare to make a report to the board. So any comments that we need to make will need to be made by the end of August, and I'll come back to address this at the end. So, Tim, can you take us through the four areas, the amendments, and I'll come back after that with some user community concerns and summarizing some of the feedback to help help the ALAC consider its response to or consider its comment on the new proposed amendments. Tim Cole.
Sure. Thank you, Bo. I wanted to emphasize that this entire process is designed to be one of consultation. We have run a number of workshops over the past a couple years at different ICANN meetings. I have met with ALAC at two or three different times throughout this period. The amendments that I'm going to describe here are not should not be considered amendments that ICANN is proposing to have the community accept so much as they are amendments that have evolved out of the consultation involving a lot of different parties, including ALAC, the intellectual property constituency, the business constituency, various groups within ICANN, as well as the registrar constituency itself. So The point I want to stress is that we are attempting to find some common ground that will allow us to move forward with introducing a number of changes to the contract in order to protect registrants in a stronger way than the current contract allows us to do. Now, of course, among all of those groups that we've held discussions, no one will feel that everything they wanted is in there or that everything that's in there is what they wanted, but we're doing our best to try to take this consultation and move it forward. So with that understanding, I'll explain what has evolved out of this discussion. We have characterized the we've come up with 15 proposed changes to the current contract. The current contract has been in force since 2001, and these changes fall roughly into four categories. And I'll just briefly go over the four categories and what changes fall under each one, so that we have a basis on which to start this consultation today. The first category is one we call enforcement tools. And the first item under that is an audit provision. The contract proposal would permit ICANN explicitly to conduct audits of a registrar, and including site visits, upon a 15-day notice. This makes more explicit and strengthens the ability for ICANN to conduct audits of registrars. The second one under that category is what we call sanctions and suspensions, and basically this is one that I think a lot of people have recommended and asked for in the consultations, and that is some form of graduated sanctions that permits us to take steps with regard to a non-compliant registrar that are short of totally terminating their contract. And among those included are some financial consequences that can be levied against a registrar if they repeatedly breach the contract. And another provision that I think is also a strong one, which is that the ability to suspend their add commands, if you will, their ability to add new registrations at the registry level for set periods of time. Our goal under both of these is to make sure that the kinds of things that we can do to take a registrar to task will not harm the underlying registrant, but would be a significant penalty to the registrar itself. We have another one that is based on group liability, and this sort of addresses the concept that there may be common ownership among a number of registrars, and the idea here would be to make sure that a registrar can't serially do bad things with one registrar after another and not be have any consequences. There's a fee provision that does two things. One, it removes a fee that we haven't charged for several years, which is a per TLD fee on top of their annual fee. But in conjunction with that, we've also added a late payment fee so that registrars who do not pay on time will start to pay an additional amount of money for that late payment. One area that surfaces with regard to registrars that are in trouble is that they're not paying their bills, and this will permit ICANN to step in and take action sooner when a registrar is not able to pay its bills. It also creates a level playing field for all registrars so that registrars that are late payers aren't getting away with something that registrars who pay on time don't have the advantage of. We also have a provision that addresses registration by registrars, and in this regard, it basically says that registrars who make a registration for the purposes of doing their business, such as a registrar that registers its own company name, will be liable to ICANN for any violations of the contract that they otherwise would be liable to the registrar for. This is a provision that helps address an issue that has been a little bit vague up until now, which is registrars who register their own names not having a specific registration agreement with themselves. And finally, under this category is the an arbitration stay. In the current contract, if a registrar is threatened with termination by ICANN, they can automatically request a 30-day stay and keep in business for another 30 days. And if they're, in fact, doing harm to their customers, this can be 30 days of additional harm. And so we have eliminated that automatic provision. They can still apply for a stay, and assuming the arbitrator determines that it's in the community interest for them to continue to do business, or that it might be in community interest for another registrar to take over their business for that period, the arbitrator can make that determination. The second broad category is we describe as registrant protections. However, I believe really virtually all of these changes are in some form or another help to protect registrants. But the first one has to do with private and proxy registration. And this provision requires registrars and their resellers to participate in the data escrow program and of data that is also the underlying data for privacy or proxy services that they offer to their customers. The requirement, however, also has a provision that permits them to not escrow data, but if they do, they must prominently notify those customers that their data will not be escrowed. So this is sort of a consumer education piece, if you will. Along with that, another area, one that came out of an ALAC proposal is a registrant rights and responsibilities document that would be created in consultation with the ICANN community. This document would be linked to by all registrars. And would be intended to be an education tool that explains to registrants what kinds of rights they have with regard to their registrar and their registrations. Also, will highlight their responsibilities. For example, maintaining accurate who is and so forth. I would expect that ALAC would be very much involved in our consultation with regard to creating this document. Also under registrant protections, we have, for the first time, are identifying the registrar's contracts with their resellers and placing a number of requirements in there that basically bring the reseller obligations to the level of the current registrar obligations with regard to consensus policies and other requirements under the RAA. Third broad category is what we call promoting stable and competitive registrar marketplace. And in that area, we address the idea of accreditation by purchase. As you may know, a number of registrars today became registrars by acquiring an existing registrar, but not by going through the application process with ICANN. In other words, they have not been vetted and examined by ICANN through an application process, but rather they've acquired an existing registrar. This provision would require them to notify ICANN and provide ICANN with all of the information about the principal players in their company and so forth, as well as to certify that they will comply with the RAA. It's a means of making sure that ownership changes still have to go through some review. Then the next one is operator skills training and testing. And again, this is one that came from the community, but it is a requirement that all registrars have at least one person on staff go through a training program that will be made available online to registrars and will be tracked by ICANN that they have in fact gone through it. We also reiterate ICANN's general policy of requiring requiring the registries, the top-level domain registries, to use ICANN-accredited registrars. The impetus here is that if the registrars are, in fact, required to comply with all of these provisions within the RAA, they should be the preferred entities with which registries do business. And so that completes that subcategory. And the last subcategory is what we call agreement modernization. And these are provisions that are just trying to take the 2001 contract and bring it up to today's standards and practices within ICANN. Among those things, we have added a notice provision that allows ICANN to give notice to registrars electronically. In the current contract, we have to give notice through a courier or some physical means, which, with, as you can imagine, when there are only a handful of registrars, that was not a problem. But now we've got over 900 registrars, so we need to be able to communicate with them about policy changes and so forth electronically. Also, there are a couple references within the current contract to the Department of Commerce, but as ICANN goes through the JPA and is moving to an independent status, we have removed those references in different registry contracts, and there is a effort here to do the same with the RAA. Lastly, there's some vagueness in the current terms as to registrars, as to how long registrars must retain data, records of their transactions with customers and so forth. And we have a provision that clarifies that and explicitly states how long they must keep that data. So, Bo, that is a brief summary of the 15 changes that are currently out there for consultation. And I think I will turn it back over to you now for the next piece here.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Tim. Appreciate that. Again, there is when and if the notes we prepared for this circulate. This is all written down there along with some key URLs so that people can track back and look at the documents in more detail. I wanted to now just take an opportunity to hopefully tee up some discussion about user community concerns. This will take me about 10 minutes or so. Why don't I start with some concerns that I have? I mean, we appreciate, or I appreciate that there has been sort of a renewed focus on contractual compliance, but for the user community, I think there's some thought that sanctions language or actual enforcement language is still too lax. I think it's puzzling to people in the user community to see that, for instance, a bad actor can register a whole bunch of bad names to sell pharmaceuticals, and then action is taken against that particular bad actor, who then goes back to the same registrar and is able to start doing the same thing all over again without any sort of sanction, or without any sort of action being taken. So I'm stealing a quote here from a document that Danny Younger submitted on this topic that just seem to be particularly eloquent. Quote, with close to 1,000 competitive registrars in the mix, we don't need a watered-down three-strikes-and-you're-out policy in place. A single willful, fundamental, and material contract breach should be sufficient to warrant a loss of accreditation. Registrars should either play by the rules or find themselves thrown off the team. End quote from Danny. I thought that summed it up fairly well. Under 2C, if you go back to the detail of what Tim went through in C.2, I have some question, and I think others in the user community have some question about why we are actually making a provision where, to quote directly from the proposed change, it says alternately alternatively give prominent notification that data will not be escrowed. I think there's a question wondering why there would be any situation in which users' positive data would not be escrowed by a registrar. We don't really understand why that clause is in there to give an out. Then I want to just briefly bring up some topics about registrar behavior that I've heard or seen. Actually, in Danny's document, which I've referenced before, he points to a letter sent to ICANN from the OECD critiquing registrar accreditation agreement as having a lack of teeth, pointing to incidences of non-compliant registration provisions, failure to provide complete or correct registration information, simple uncontactability, failure to properly implement transfer decisions, refusal to implement UDRP decisions, improperly deleting domain names, improperly unlocking a domain name during a proceeding, cyber squatting. The point of all of these being that bad actors seem to be able to engage in criminal activity, be sanctioned, and then go back and do the same thing as we've discussed before. So I guess we would like to hear some discussion about whether ICANN plans to enforce what it codifies in the new RAA, because I think there's been a real disconnect between what's written down in the RAA and what's actually enforced. Quoting from Danny's note, which are from Danny's submission, which is really a good read if you have a chance to look at it. Quote, that which we see in the proposed RAA revisions is not in keeping with the community will, as no specific fees are established per violation. Neither do we expect the proposed language to deter any registrar from engaging in less than admirable behaviors. Basically, we're at the point where ICANN must make a decisive choice. It can either continue to coddle its registrars, or it can start kicking butt. The user community favors the latter approach. End quote from Danny, and I'd have to say that there is some resonance with that in the user community as I've heard it. Before I go to sort of conclusions to help us think about how to formulate feedback, I did want to go back to Tim and just ask for his take on or some elaboration on the Department of Commerce's submission of a few weeks ago. Primarily, it was a fairly short submission, so I encourage everyone to go and read it, but their point was on who is. Tim, could you elaborate on what the Department of Commerce's comment on the new amendments was?
Well, Bo, it makes me a little uncomfortable for you to ask me to summarize their submission. I really would prefer if people were to read it and to get their take on it, because if I'm to summarize it, then I'm you know, sort of trying to characterize or might be perceived as giving ICANN's interpretation of their comments. I would prefer if somebody in your group would summarize it than to ask me to, because it's not ICANN's submission, but it's certainly it's something that we have, you know, taken into consideration and are responding to directly to the DOC, in addition to taking it as part of the public comments here. But they too are addressing primarily concerns with the issue that you raised earlier with regard to the privacy and proxy services.
Okay, well that's a fair point. I will send something out to the ALEC about that, because another thing I'm engaged in at the moment is the ongoing sort of who is. It's now evolved to what's called the Who Is Hypotheses Working Group, and there's a lot of stuff being discussed in there that pertains to this, but also every other imaginable kind of thought someone might have on who is, and I think that the ALEC really needs to get involved in that discussion. So I will do that. That's a fair point. All right, before we open this up to comments or questions, I did want to just sort of come back to the issue of feedback. I think it would be best, from what I've heard from staff, that whatever we choose to submit as comments on these new amendments should be written down and coordinated. If people would like to send their comments to me for a coordinated response, I will volunteer to help put them together. Or if you wish, you can send them also directly to Tim, who graciously offered to take them. A reminder that we are late in the process at this point, and we may be better off
left
having more impact by phrasing things more positively, things that we think are good and things that we think are missing that should be included, rather than sort of saying, you know, this is unacceptable and we're going to have to start over because the process is pretty far along at this point, and I don't think such a comment will be well heard. And we would need feedback by the end of this month, so we have a very short window of a couple of weeks to come up with or to work on what we believe needs to be said from ALEC on the new proposed new provisions to the RIA. So with that, I think we can open it up to questions and observations and anything else that anyone wants to submit at this point while we have Tim with us. Do we have any questions? Or?
Bo, this is Danny. I've got a procedural question.
Oh, okay.
After the final spate of comments comes through, what does staff view as the next steps in the process?
I will. Tim and I did talk a bit about that in preparation for this yesterday. Tim, do you want to comment on that, or?
Well, realistically, the process to date has been driven. This most recent cycle has been driven by a board resolution that instructed us to develop in consultation with the community and the registrars a set of amendments, which we did. Then the next step from the board resolution was to seek public comment, which we are in the process of doing. And then we are to report back to the board with that. So to be honest, the next step at this point is to report back to the board about this consultation. And then I would imagine the board will take that that information and determine what it chooses to do with regard to the next steps. I can't prejudge what they will do. They could say any number of things. They could proceed with proposing some approval of some or all of the amendments. They could say we think more dialogue is necessary. I can't prejudge what they will say, but it really will go back to the board now for its next steps.
Thank you.
I would just like to again repeat at the risk of being boring, just that we as ALEC have a little bit of a window of extra time to make comment here, as there has been some extra time given to the at-large community because we were so late in terms of getting the documents translated into French and Spanish. So those of us on the ALEC and the Spanish and French-speaking community who have raised concerns about not having documents properly translated, I'd like to say specifically to you, these are translated for you now. So if you wish to comment or wish to make observations about the RAA, this is definitely the time to do it. Any other questions or issues from the floor?
It's Sébastien Bachelet.
Just so you know, Bo, there are at least 5 people on the Spanish channel. I've just asked the operators to let us know if any of them have any questions or comments to make.
Before Sebastian goes, could I just ask a clarification from Nick as to exactly and specifically what is translated and what is not at this time? The RIA itself is translated, and everybody's been alerted to that, but the proposed amendments are not translated, is that right?
The announcement, the amendments, and the narrative summary of the amendments are all translated.
Excellent.
As well as the raw RIA, which it is worth noting is the first official, quote-unquote, translation ICANN has done of a legal contract, though, of course, it is for the purposes of comprehension only. You couldn't actually sign an agreement with ICANN as a registrar in Spanish or French. And I understand we will shortly have Korean, Japanese, and Chinese editions of the RAA and the amendments.
Excellent. Okay. Sorry, Sebastian?
Yes. Maybe it's a little bit a side topic, but I wanted to to know where the other work done about the registrar agreement with the group IRTP will fit with that. Is it a supplementary work? And why it was not handled in just one single group? Why it's a second group? I just asking that for two reasons. The first one is to understand, because as you may know, I don't know what, but I am supposed to work on that. Now I am working on this subgroup, working group. And the second reason is that there is very short windows to make comments on those issues who will be done in this working group. And if we want to have ALAC doing something, I guess it will be better maybe to have parallel, but at the same time, a discussion on the other registrar agreement modifications.
Moi, je ne sais pas. Tim, do you know, can you speak any more specifically to that, or...
Sebastian, if I understand, your question has to do with the transfer policy work. Is that correct?
Yes, it's you're right, and you say better than me. Yes, it's a work done by the group now about the transfer policy between registrars. And Marika is in charge of, if I guess, of one part of the work, then maybe she can help with that.
I apologize, because I'm not a primary staff person on that project. There may be other staff persons on the call that have more knowledge of that. But my understanding primarily is that group is not so much tasked with looking at how the RAA functions per se, but rather with the workings of that consensus policy, and whether that consensus policy itself needs either clarification or updating. But with regard to the consultation on that, I'm afraid I'm just not as up to speed, because it's not my primary focus.
Yeah, I understand that, and I know you are not involved directly in that working group. Okay, just maybe keep that if we don't have the answer right now. I guess that there are staff people who can help with that. I just want to be sure that I am sure that somebody already looked at no duplication of work, but how it fits one with the other. It would be better for me to understand that. Thank you.
It's Alan. I have a comment.
Okay.
Right now within GNSO, there are six PDPs, six policy development processes going on regarding inter-register transfer, and they're in various stages of completion. So there's a lot of work going on, and there will be opportunities. It's, the overall problem has been divided essentially into six areas, and one is almost ready, one is just starting, and the other four will be done as, essentially in sequence, potentially overlapping, but nevertheless in sequence. So Sebastian, I can point you to documents on that, and there will be plenty of opportunities to work with these groups if you're interested.
And to add to that, we indeed just started work on the new issues that were identified, and that working group is ongoing. And Sebastian, I'm happy to answer any further questions you have, maybe offline, and I think you're part of the working group as well, aren't you?
For the interpreters...
Yeah, yes, I am. Yes, Marika, I am.
So please, I mean, if you have any further questions, maybe we can talk about that offline, if you want.
Okay.
For the interpreter, that was Marika Koenig just speaking.
Sorry.
The other reason why I dropped that into the discussion is that my feeling, I take this opportunity to say to ALAC and at-large people that we will have to give a say in that working group very shortly and with very short windows, and it's why I take this opportunity. But it was a side topic. Sorry, Bo, about that.
No, it's okay. Anything else from the group here related to the agreement and amendments itself?
Bo, this is Danny. This is a question for Tim Cole. We've talked in the past about families of registrars and essentially why they came into being. My concern is that as we move forward into the new GTLD land rush cycle, that we don't see these families of registrars gaming that cycle. Are there any provisions that you see within the current revisions to the RAA that would deal with the possibility of registrar gaming of subsequent land rush cycles?
I'm not quite sure when you say gaming, what it is you mean in terms of land rush. Perhaps you could clarify for me what your question refers to.
Sure. Let's say I'm an average consumer and I go to a registrar that's only got one shot at the queue, and I'm interested in acquiring a particular name. If I had known that another registrar has got 112 shots at that particular queue, I probably would have gone to that other registrar. At this point in time, families seem to have an advantage over others when it comes to securing names for their customers. Is that a correct assessment?
Well, you know, to the extent that someone can coordinate access, those multiple registrars in the past have coordinated access on the drop pool.
Mm-hmm.
But the, you know, the land rushes for any given registry will be governed by registry policy. The registrar's contract, you know, is governing their actions as a registrar, but, you know, the actual land rush in any given registry will have a policy associated with it that's developed by that, you know, that registry, and the registries may each have different business models. So it's hard for me to say how those registries will structure their land rush and whether or not they will permit, you know, access that way. But, you know, to be honest, I suspect that, you know, as a competitive marketplace, all of these things come to play. I'm not quite sure where a contract violation might fall in, or what you could define into a contract that would address that.
Okay, thank you.
I have this is Beau. I have a comment myself that I will just make to the group, which is it's really nice to see under 2 registrant protections, item B, registrant rights and responsibilities. Although it probably should be slightly reworded to say registrant rights and registrar responsibilities, but requiring registrars to include on their websites a link to a registrant rights and responsibilities document to be created in consultation with the ICANN community. That's great to see that in there. I just wanted to let everybody know that that is a work in progress. We are working on it now and can circulate some ideas. But anybody who would like to contribute or would like to help with that, I could really use your help.
Just as a point of reference, Bo, the idea behind that was originally proposed by Vittorio Bertola. So perhaps it might be judicious to get his thoughts on the matter.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. I'm glad I didn't actually know that, so I will email him specifically. Thank you.
Yeah, it had Cheryl here. It had broad support from Europe, which is not surprising, I suppose. And at earlier points in time, though, I did mention that at least in some of the CCTLDs, you've got industry codes of conduct, which have been agreed and developed in a self-regulatory policy framework within country. Australia happens to be one of them, and I happen to chair it, so I know a bit about it. And that has taken in some aspects of what this registrar responsibility and expectations for registrants may wish to encompass. And I'd be more than happy to send you the links on that.
That would be great, yeah. I have the sense that we may not necessarily have to have that complete by the end of August to send along with whatever ALEC statement is. But I think if it were completed, it would be great. But I think to be able to say that we're working on it would be really good. So,
Bo, this is Tim. I just wanted to mention again that, you know, should these amendments, you know, go through, and should that one, for example, be incorporated, we, of course, would be developing, you know, as I mentioned earlier, with the community and you know, in particular with ALAC and others, this whole, these materials. So there definitely will be opportunities for input into that process.
Oh, great. Great.
This is Danny.
Sorry, Danny, just to
sure.
bounce back to Tim here, Cheryl here. The issue is we need to be more proactive and reactive. We get a bunch of stuff happening at us, strangely enough, before every face-to-face meeting, and we need to pre-plan. And
you and me both.
So don't tell them to wait. We need to get started soon and not later. Go ahead, Danny. Sorry.
All right. I just thought I would ask Tim. I know that over the years, the registrar community has made attempts at dealing with the creation of a code of conduct document for registrars. And those of us in the community that are concerned by registrar conduct would very much like to see this work come to fruition. Could you perhaps give us an update as to the current state of staff efforts to work with registrars on a code of conduct?
Well, Danny, right now the code of conduct provision in the current contract says that if the registrars adopt a code of conduct, they will be all required to follow it. That concept, it seems, really is not perceived as ICANN driven, but rather registrar driven, or, you know, possibly in the case of as you describe, registrant driven. In other words, it certainly seems to be something that the registrar's customers could insist on and could argue that, those registrars that agree to some form of code of conduct are going to be the preferred registrars for customers. Having said that, I think there is an enhanced interaction that has, over the last couple meetings, between the registrar constituency and the ALAC, and this certainly could be an area where I think you could be instrumental in encouraging them to pursue that.
All right. I guess the other pragmatic way of approaching it, we saw the URID registry put forward a code of conduct for registrars that sign up to use their particular services. In terms of a practical approach going forward, perhaps we might be better advised to work with the potential registry contenders more so than with the registrar community per se. But I appreciate your comment. Thank you.
You know, Danny, that also, going back to your earlier question about the gaming of Land Rush, I think, you know, both that code of conduct concept and the gaming concept are probably ones that would fit very nicely into, discussions or interaction with prospective registries or even existing registries. So I think that's not necessarily out of the question that may be a direction to consider going.
And I also see that the intellectual property
Darlene.
Constituency
left
put together a document specifically for new registry operators on intellectual property concerns. In that spirit, it might behoove the ALAC to consider working along those lines as well. It was a very nice template that they generated.
It's Alan. Could I get in the queue?
Go ahead, Alan.
When you were talking before about we are doing something, I presume you mean ALAC. Although it may be hard to get cooperation in doing this from the registrar community as such, there may well be a good number of registrars who are amenable and interested in participating in this. And to the extent that we can get some high-profile registrars involved in the process also, whether formally or informally, I think we're likely to end up in a better product and more likely to be adopted.
Yeah, this is Bo. I would have to agree with that, having some experience developing codes of best practices and such, getting industry to be part of it, or I say industry, meaning registrars in the particular way that I see the world. So getting them to buy into that kind of process and contribute to it certainly can be, certainly does help with the success of it overall. So I actually did take on some responsibility to get in touch with the registrar community itself. So if you know anybody outside, I mean, I'm talking to Jonathan Nevitt as the conduit, so I will ask him specifically, but if you have any suggestions as to registrars whom you know who might be amenable, that would be good.
Well, I mean, I can certainly name some. I'm sure Danny can name some, but the point I was making is working with individual registrars may be more practical than trying to get the community, the registry, the constituency, to participate.
Well, I think the approach, this is Beau again. I mean, I think the approach of getting, I think the ALAC has a strong role to play here, in that if we can get, you know, registrar cooperation in creating this type of bill of rights or list of best practices or whatever, and then as the user community say, you know, we're going to encourage internet users only to do business with companies that subscribe to this code of conduct. I mean, that's a pretty powerful thing. I'm not sure, you know, going registrar for registrar.
No, I'm just saying, in trying to draft it and put it together.
Oh, to draft
that,
it. Okay.
That may be practical to try to elicit the support of some friendly registrars, as it were.
Ah, okay. Yep, that makes sense. Anybody else? Okay.
Yeah, Bo, I did have a final thought, and it goes back to your original question with respect to the NTIA's comments. Look, they did point out their view that they felt that ICANN was, if I recall correctly, not completely in pursuit of all of their affirmations with respect to WHOIS, at least in particular. And staff has already indicated to us that they've had subsequent conversations with the DOC on that topic. Can we at least get a feel for where discussions are at this point?
I'm not sure what your question can.
All right, well, I'll rephrase the question. When I read the DOC comments, they basically said, ICANN, as it pertains to your obligations under WHOIS, you seem to be in default of your affirmation of responsibilities on that point. Where are you guys vis-a-vis Department of Commerce at the moment in your current discussion?
Well, our compliance department is actively pursuing some aggressive WHOIS data accuracy follow-up with registrars. They're doing studies. The GNSO also has a discussion undergoing about, about the studies that they may request on WHOIS. But certainly, you know, our position all along and continues to be that we will enforce the WHOIS provisions that exist, and to the extent that they require additional compliance efforts, we are dedicating new resources to that effort.
Well, I think your specific comment went to proxy services in particular, saying that essentially the existence of proxy services and you're allowing these services to exist through the contract puts you in default. What's your take on that?
Well, I don't have a specific answer to that. You know, today the letter is public, and we will respond to it publicly as an organization. But I certainly believe that ICANN's position is that we are not in default of anything, and that we are pursuing and enforcing the WHOIS provisions accordingly.
Okay, thank you.
You know, Danny, one of the things about that whole proposed amendment. you know, as you can imagine, right now the data escrow requires registrars to escrow the information that they have under the WHOIS for the registrant. So if the registrant is the proxy service, that's what they're required to escrow. So, you know, our escrow provisions today require all of that data to be escrowed. Unfortunately, if a half of the registrar's customers are in escrow, then the same information is being, you know, are in a proxy service and the same information is being escrowed. What these amendments were designed to do was to get at the actual underlying data and escrow additional information that isn't being escrowed today. So ironically, you know, if we are not, if that provision does not go through, or if it only, you know, then again, less information will be escrowed, not more. So, you know, certainly ICANN's goal in advancing this is to escrow more information, and where it isn't escrowed, to at least enhance consumer and informed decision by the consumer. In other words, if the consumer wishes to go somewhere where it's not going to be escrowed, they need to know that if that registrar does not survive for some reason or another, there's no guarantee that their information will be preserved. And so, you know, our goal here is to try to educate and enhance the escrowing, the value of the escrow, not to minimize it.
For the life of me, I cannot understand why you provided the registrar community with a opt-out situation there, as opposed to simply requiring all underlying beneficial registrant data to be escrowed. What was your thinking? What was your rationale?
We go back again to the informed consumer. We have gotten from ALAC and from others all along, you know, calls for additional education, additional information. You know, this is a marketplace that has, you know, a variety of creative approaches to things. And frankly, if we were to insist on a hard, fast rule of 100% of those offerings that were made available by the registrar, all we would do is drive the proxy service to a third-party underground provision that would not involve the registrar, and that we would have no influence over.
So this is Beau again. The give prominent notification that such data will not be escrowed language is an attempt to prompt better disclosure among registrars when that's going on.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, as you can imagine right now, there are many third parties. For example, law firms often register names for their customers. So they are, if you will, you know, listed as the registrant. Well, that's a proxy service.
Yeah, hang on. Cheryl here. We've just spent a number of painful hours discussing this very issue in a CCTLD situation. And interestingly enough, when you talk to consumers, they often don't realize that it's being done in somebody else's name. They actually think they are the licensee. So there's several levels of, shall we say, smoke and mirror capability here. And I think we need to look at that.
It's Alan, and of course, the whole concept or issue of resellers makes this whole image from a consumer point of view completely fuzzy.
Indeed.
I tend to get the general impression that we're more concerned about protecting registrar models than we actually are about protecting the consumer. That's my take.
I think you're not unique in that.
No. but to the extent that even in a CCTLD context, we're working very hard, Cheryl here, to educate our existing licensees about what it means. What is the difference between a reseller and a registrar, and where their ability to see, because we don't show resellers on our WHOIS listing, and we often get people ringing saying who is XYZ company, because they don't have any concept of who it is. They've never dealt with them. We're altering our own information set, so it shows consumers that whilst the registrar of record is XYZ company, the license was sold for a two-year period in our case via this, or not necessarily a named reseller, but a reseller of XYZ company. And that is giving consumers some concept, at least, of the complexity. It's not an easy education process, and it's certainly not one that we can assume we're dealing with informed consumers, certainly not at this stage.
Most consumers don't have the ability to figure out who they're really dealing with.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's why the disclosure sort of thing is incredibly important, but even then, it's sometimes difficult to lead the consumer. You can lead the consumer horse to water, but not necessarily make the consumer horse drink.
Yeah, but they want an answer when there's a problem.
Yes, they do.
Bo, this is Danny. In my reading of the general comments, I saw more than a sufficient number of comments by a number of parties indicating somewhat of a broad dissatisfaction that a number of topics were not addressed by the RAA properly. And I'm wondering whether going forward we have got the option of treating this RAA not as a series of amendments, but as a brand new contract to be created in its entirety from whole cloth through the GNSO process, the same way that we essentially came up with principles and specific recommendations that will allow for a new GTLD contract to be created. I'd like to ask Tim whether he sees that as one of the options going forward. Is there a possibility that staff would cooperate in a GNSO endeavor to draft a brand new contract as opposed to a set of 15 amendments?
Well, Danny, I mean, it's not a question of whether staff will cooperate. Staff supports the GNSO in whatever they, you know, choose, however they choose to go forward with in the context of their rules and structure and mandate, of course.
Because, I mean,
our
an option, right?
I'm sorry?
A new contract is an option?
A new consensus policy is an option. The GNSO has no authority to create a contract per se, but the contract itself can be impacted by policy, followed by the GNSO. So, the contract is between ICANN and the registrars, and the contract, both the registry and registrar contracts, all have consensus policy provisions in them that require them to follow any consensus policies that get adopted according to the policy process. So that would be the approach one would have to take.
Why? I'm sorry, I don't understand why. I understand that under the terms of the current contract, ICANN may introduce a substitute agreement. And I also understand that the GNSO...
If it is adopted according to the policy process.
Okay. I'm just looking at the possibility of wider participation in the formulation of a new contract. Right now, I'm seeing pretty much what amounts to a private negotiation between staff and the registrars.
One of the problems, Danny, is the registry... The registry contract PDP was deemed to be out of scope by ICANN legal counsel, and therefore that makes it an awful lot harder to do with a lot larger thresholds.
Out of scope, really?
It's out of scope as a consensus policy, which is for GNSO.
Got it.
It's a contractual matter, which is deemed to be out of scope.
Right,
didn't stop it from going ahead. It's just the thresholds are more difficult.
Well, I wouldn't really know how to. I don't have the internal ICANN knowledge to be able to comment further on that. I mean, I don't know.
if you know the.
But I do think, I do think there are some things. I think Danny points out correctly. There are some things in the queue of user comments that weren't necessarily covered here or that are in the amendments. I mean, I saw some complaints on data warehousing, or not data warehousing, but warehousing practices and things like that that aren't enumerated here. So maybe one thing that we should do in making our comments is to visit some of the things that haven't been mentioned here or elsewhere so that those users are heard.
My impression, and I haven't participated heavily in this, is that all parties acknowledge this is not the definitive RAA, but a set of things that we thought there was some chance of getting agreement in within a modest amount of time or a moderate amount of time. That doesn't say there shouldn't be a parallel started to then work on the ones we didn't get to.
This is Tim, and I don't want to... I interject my view, but just to say that we have experience with, for example, the Who Is issue. You know, significant effort and energy extended without a lot of a lot to show for it. And I would suspect that doing this with the RAA and trying to create one process that the community as a whole enters into for creating an entire contract could certainly face comparable, if not more significant, challenges than the Who Is issue. Having said that, I know Danny's position is that we shouldn't just accept this as, piecemeal and then hope for more, but the reality is that we've got a number of things in here that will address registrant issues and will help to augment protection of registrants. And whether this final set goes through or not, I think, one question to ask is, do we want to defer any of these? Are there some that we would rather defer than to get because we want more? Or would we be willing to have these and then continue on a policy process for additional things or a further process that the board might direct staff to engage in? But in any event, the warehousing issue, for example, is clearly identified in the current contract, and it says, if a warehousing policy is adopted, all registrars must abide by it. So there has been a signal since 2001 that if the community wanted to enter into a policy discussion about warehousing, they've always had the opportunity to do so, and nothing would prevent that today. So I'm just tossing some of those ideas out there for the sake of the discussion.
Tim, this is Danny. I'd just like to jump back in for a second. I go back to the time of the redemption grace period discussions where we basically took the position that, okay, we were going to put something through and then we were going to leave redemption grace period to a phase two point in time where we would ultimately be able to choose a redeeming registrar. Well, experience teaches us that we never make it to that phase two. So I'm just scared to death that we're going to wind up with these 15 amendments that, in my view, don't go far enough to satisfy register fly victims, and we're going to be stuck with that for a number of years. That's why I'm pushing for a more comprehensive approach.
But what is the alternative with regard to timeline?
Yeah, sometimes we're going to have to take some time. We know that. It's how we work here.
I guess what I hear you say, Danny, is that you, I'm not quite sure, I wasn't involved in the RGP discussion, but it seems to me it would have been incumbent upon members of the community or the council or whatever to bring forward, the next step.
Actually, it was incumbent on the president, and he failed to do so.
I see. The president can't make policy.
No, but the president can launch a group of people tasked with a particular project.
Sure.
Anyway.
Certainly on any given subject, the ALAC can push the issue we're requesting an issues report. And the question, we clearly can't do everything at once in that mode, but it may be worth testing one of these and trying to push something that we think should have been addressed by now and isn't.
Thank you for that, Alan.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, the board can do it also. The GNSO can do it. All sorts of groups can do it. But if we feel strongly about one that we think will, to be honest, catch the fancy of the various participants and push it through, then that's what we should do.
Could I just ask, just kind of perhaps to wind up, unless anybody has anything else to add, to ask a sort of a more general question about enforcement. I mean, I've heard, and from some of the user comments I've reviewed and whatnot, that in a sense the RAA is viewed by many as something of a, this is perhaps stating it too strongly, but viewed as something of a joke anyway, because ICANN has not enforced the provisions of it before, so why should we expect that it's going to do it now? I certainly don't want to put Tim on the spot to comment on that particular opinion, but I was just sort of wondering if...
Oh, I welcome it, though.
You would, okay. Well, I mean,
yeah.
Are we going to... I mean, is the user community going to be put in the place of many consumer and advocacy groups in which they literally have to sue ICANN to get it to enforce its own regulations or something like that, or...?
I think that, you know, I believe that you're not giving us credit for what we've done. If you've noticed over the last few months, we have announced three registrars that have been deaccredited, for whom we're trying to find a home for their registrants.
Yep.
We announced a registrar that was in breach for failing to enforce a UDRP decision. We have numerous registrars that have come close to being deaccredited for failure to enroll in the RDE, the Registrar Data Escrow. We now have over 93% of all registrations on in the GTLD universe being escrowed, and we are going to publicly go after the remaining registrars that have not fully enrolled or followed that process. I think, you know, you're overlooking the enforcement efforts that have been, you know, clearly and publicly been done under the recent contractual compliance program. Behind the scenes of that, you know, are hundreds of other actions that don't make it to the public arena because they either clean up their act or fix it or choose to get out of business.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And you know, the recent sort of developments also in better public communication and sending out news alerts and whatnot, I think, are helping to get that message out. So,
I mean, we hear the same refrain over and over. ICANN has no teeth. ICANN is not doing any compliance, or the contract doesn't mean anything because they don't enforce it. Then we do very publicly over and over and over, and we still don't get credit for it.
Tim, I don't want to take us down a rat hole, as it were, but do you...
aren't we there already?
I just wonder if, you know, maybe this is a discussion for a later time, it may be that some of the efforts which aren't visible to outsiders or are hard to find simply could be presented more frequently or differently.
They are. There's a monthly compliance newsletter, Nick, that is published, and you can subscribe to it. It summarizes the compliance efforts that have been taken each month. You know, I think we're doing a very good job of publicizing that. Whether we list every registrar that has had any complaint filed against it in the last month is not, you know, is counterproductive. But if we do our job, and I believe we are, of pursuing registrars that are misbehaving and going after them at a much earlier stage than in the registrar-quiet situation, I think we're doing our job.
Well, I'm not saying that we aren't. I'm just saying that some of the ways in which we are, in which the company is reporting things, are fairly new, and may simply, the word may simply not be disseminated often enough or integrated enough into other communications which are related. I mean, I'm perfectly happy to tell you that I don't actually think to distribute information about compliance activities on the assumption that people can join the newsletter that comes from the compliance department, but many people may not do that because they don't want that much information about it. They just want something more than zero.
I'd like to talk
about... This is
about
just a thought, and maybe, again, I'm taking us off on a tangent that's not helpful.
Well, I don't know about that. This is, though, I mean, they're getting the information to consumers and getting it to them in a way that they can digest it or know that it's going on. I mean, expecting them to subscribe to a newsletter with that, you know, few consumers are going to subscribe to a newsletter that's titled Contractual Compliance Review or Report. I mean, so maybe it's the Alex job to try to distribute that information more thoroughly. I'm not sure. Danny had a comment, I think.
Yeah. I read the public report from Nuzhan that pointed to a single Chinese registrar with 11,000 WDPRS complaints that were apparently not corrected. Yet I didn't hear anything from ICANN indicating either that the corrections are underway or that the registrar has been spoken to.
Before we go any further with that, is everyone on the call familiar with what the WDPRS is? Or rather, I should say, is there anyone who is not familiar with it?
Well, Cheryl here, rather than particularly when we're talking about a translation and interpretation facilitation call, I think rather than put people on a spot to say, yes, I do or don't, I think a synopsis would be very worthwhile.
The WDPRS is an acronym for the Who Is Data Problem Reporting System.
Yep.
If an individual discovers an issue with a particular Who Is record, you can go online, file a complaint, and that complaint is theoretically to be investigated by the registrar.
Thanks for that, Danny.
So I guess the question comes back to this. You're telling us that compliance measures are in place, and we're seeing public reports that seem to indicate the opposite is true.
I don't know that there's reports that the opposite is true, but I think, that the Nuzhan reports are based on their appraisal or their summary of information. They are not necessarily based on the reality that underlies that, but I certainly know that there are no registrars out there that have a large number of unanswered WDPRS filings that have not become a subject of some compliance investigation.
Okay, then perhaps the real issue is that while public reports are being made by complainants, we're not seeing a public response from ICANN to those reports, so we're left in a quandary. We don't know whether, in fact, action is being taken. Maybe it's a communications issue here.
Yeah, well, under the current contract, what we can do with regard to compliance has some pretty strict timelines and steps that must be followed. Certainly, some of those timelines and steps are improved upon in the amendments that have been proposed that would permit greater action at an earlier stage. But having said that, the compliance efforts, are being pursued in a number of areas and with a number of registrars, and not all of that one of the tools that we currently have, because we don't have that many in terms of short of de-accrediting a registrar, one of the tools we have is public exposure. Now, if we do that too frequently or too early in the process when we're still working with registrars to correct things, that could be counterproductive. But on the other hand, if it remains a solid tool, if we retain that as a solid tool, then it's more productive when we use it. So having said that, I am not in the compliance department, but I do know that compliance efforts are being undertaken with regard to a number of registrars. And as I said, we have de-accredited some, The registrar I think you're referring to is the largest registrar in China, and you know, as you can imagine, that's, you know, that's no small undertaking to consider just simply de-accrediting the largest registrar in China. We would have to figure out what to do with millions of domain registrations, and so, you know, needless to say, we have to proceed cautiously in terms of how we impact those registrants.
So in this particular scenario, moving forward, assuming that these RAA revisions go forward, where are the specific financial penalties? I mean, how do you deal with this thing in, under
well,
the terms of the new contract?
Well, I mean, we could instruct, you know, we could instruct the registries to cease doing any new ads for that registrar until they clean up their act. That would have a significant impact on the registrar while not directly adversely affecting their customers.
Okay, thanks.
We don't have that ability today. But that's a pretty heavy hammer to hit a registrar with.
When you refer to ads, again, for the translators, I believe you're referring to the ability of a registrar to register domains for new registrants.
Or transfer in, yes.
Okay.
And if we just may ask, was there a reason why the route of specific financial penalties for specific violations was not pursued? I mean, I do look at the earlier .com contract where we had a sanctions appendix that very clearly pointed to specific monetary charges that would accrue. 100,000, if I'm not mistaken, in that prior contract for the first violation. What was your thinking in not moving forward along those lines when you drafted this approach?
Well, it's not my drafting, Danny. Again, this is a consultation process. In terms of attempting to find a meaningful and related fee structure, we looked at what were the actual costs to ICANN to both enforce the provision as well as to address any possible underlying impact. And to give you an example, if ICANN has to hire additional staff to handle consumer inquiries because a registrar has failed to respond to something, that could become part of whatever fee was levied against the registrar. But in any event, it's the fee structure for that portion is related to the enforcement cost. It has a direct relationship to what their actions have caused ICANN to have to do. As you can imagine, ICANN is you know, continuously looked at for, you know, for where, you know, where it's getting money, where it's you know, getting funding, and you know, one of the areas that is a concern is, you know, we can't have a fine structure that looks like it's simply a means of ICANN gaining a lot of funds. It has to have a meaningful relationship to the violation itself.
Well, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, the $100,000 you referred to, was that ever charged? Was it ever levied?
No, ICANN hasn't been very good at that in that department.
You know, if we charge a registrar a lot of money, who pays that? The registrants, right?
Perhaps. I mean, the money.
I mean, that's where their funds
will come from—a registrar's hosting accounts.
Well, that's still registrants. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're still ultimately talking about the registrant. We're trying to create things that do as little harm to the registrants while we get the registrars to behave.
Okay, is it your general sense that after this set of amendments goes through that registrars will be behaving?
It is my sense that the registrars that are behaving will have an advantage over those that are not, and will therefore create an environment where consumers are going to have a clear choice of, of solid behaving registrars and the others. But I still think that, you know, it's not entirely up to ICANN. There are other entities that need to be working on communicating. You know, we have long talked about this idea of a rating system or what have you, and I still think that would be a, you know, a tremendous